Hello, and welcome to Helvetic, a podcast. I'm Joe.
And I'm not.
That's
true. I'm David.
Yes. Thanks. This is a podcast about the intersection of faith and design. David, do we have any follow-up?
We do have some follow-up here in the form of listener feedback. Guys, Joe called it follow-up instead of feedback. I am so happy.
Yeah. That's basically me giving a verbal hug to you.
Now I feel dirty. So when I posted the new episode, I got lots of reaction memes. GIFs on Slack. Lots of dancing parrots. So much dancing.
It was so fantastic.
Captain Picard is dancing. If you're not on the Slack, Joe, how can they get on the Slack?
If you want to get on the Slack, you need to probably send an email to those tech reformation guys and ask to get on the Slack.
No, you go to slack.techreformation.com.
Yeah, that's what I'd do that too. But and, send those guys an email anyways.
Yeah, send them an email. Tell them you said hi. All right. Lots of feedback on there. The episode, actually, the last episode just came out at the time of this recording a couple days ago because of some confusion with how we were doing the recording and just issues. So
let's just say it was Joe's fault.
It wasn't Joe's fault. No. It was communication's fault.
Joe.
not a whole lot of feedback. So why don't we, Joe, are you playing Pokemon?
No, I am not currently playing Pokemon. Nice try.
Okay. What's our topic there, Joe?
Our topic is going to be, Pokemon Go and Apple Watch Circles. So discussing apps that encourage good or positive, non-lazy behavior and kind of basically the gamification of people's behavior.
I like that. The gamification of people's behavior.
Yep.
That would be a great title if we didn't make our titles useless.
Yeah, that's true. Because our title is going to be different than that. Probably way better. More better.
Something like Captain Picard was dancing.
Yeah, exactly. So dancy.
We had this idea. I mean, first of all, it's pretty irresistible if you do any kind of news coverage-y stuff. It's pretty irresistible to cover the Pokemon epidemic. Casey Neistat has a video where he went to a few parks in New York and everybody was playing Pokemon there. I mean, I'm sure he exaggerated it.
I don't know.
But I'm sure he also didn't have to exaggerate it.
Not have to exaggerate much, at least. Some people were talking about going for a walk downtown to actually play Pokemon, walk downtown.
This was my suggestion, actually.
Yeah, that's right. And I joined in with that and on a lark downloaded the Pokemon app and went on that walk with everyone. And I asked everyone that was actually holding a cell phone up. So I didn't ask everyone that I passed in the park, but everyone that was actually holding a cell phone up, which, you know, you can be texting, you can be doing all sorts of things if you're holding your cell phone up, to a man, every single person.
And a woman.
Well, I'm a man and they were speaking to me. to a man, every single person.
That said, is not how that expression
works. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I get that wrong? Every single person that I asked actually was playing Pokemon Go today down at Riverfront Park in Spokane, if you can believe that. It was actually a little weird because that game's been out for, what, a week? A little more?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know exactly.
It's been in alpha and beta testing before that, but actually out to the public, I think it's been like a week, and it is a crazy phenomenon right now.
Yeah, and do you go to Riverfront Park very much during your lunch break?
No, once in a while.
Okay, did it seem like there were more people, I guess, is the question, because I don't go down there during lunch very much.
Yes, it seemed like there were more people, but it's also, I mean, we're getting into summer months, it's going to be just busier down there.
That's true.
What I noticed is a couple days ago, before I did any Pokemon at all, I rode my bike through the park.
Like a Mormon.
Yeah, like a Mormon. Yeah, pretty much, yeah. It was like there were zombies walking around with iPhones attached to their faces. Like they were just walking around playing Pokemon all over even a couple of days ago. And I don't typically go through that portion of the park on my bike ride if I'm commuting by bike back and forth.
So I guess a good first question before we even get into the idea of gamification of behavior and all that is, we both downloaded the Pokemon app today. My idea, the original idea for this episode was to talk about Pokemon Go and the Apple Watch circles where they kind of gamify exercise. And I realized that I don't have an Apple Watch and I haven't played Pokemon Go. So we joked about also reviewing other things that we've never tried, which I honestly, it wouldn't be uncommon for this podcast.
Right. Yeah. No, they're not unusual at all.
I think a few episodes ago, we reviewed a laptop that neither one of us has. But anyway, so we decided to try it. And what did you think of the design of the game itself? Just like from a design perspective, UI, UX, colors, etc. What did you think, Joe?
You know, I thought it kind of captured the something of the old Nintendo flair of a real clean, almost... I never played Pokemon. I'm in an age group that entirely missed the whole Pokemon phenomenon. So first and foremost, this is just totally unfamiliar to me.
Just a little young.
I'm like, hey, kids, what's one of these Pikachus? and so I'm definitely on the unfamiliar side of these things. I mean, I've heard of it, but I've never had any personal interaction with it before. But I thought that it had something of a Legend of Zelda sort of a feel to the... art style, and then of course, you know, they've got all the Pokemon creatures and whatnot there, but it captures that, and it's a real clean interface. A little buggy. I was having a hard time getting it to work for me, and I had to restart it multiple times during my walk.
And you're on iOS 9, not 10, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm on you know, the stable iOS version right now, and basically, like, I wasn't seeing any of the creatures. I wasn't getting any of the creatures until I restarted about halfway into the walk. And then suddenly, like, oh, they're everywhere. Okay, this is a little bit more like what I was expecting.
Yeah, I felt like, yeah, you describing it as the classic Nintendo flair, it really did feel like somebody had picked up some Nintendo 64 game and planted it right, you know, in reality, really, when you do the augmented reality thing, which wasn't working quite correctly for me because I'm on iOS 10. Something about the API where it detects orientation seems to have changed. But regardless, it did feel very Nintendo 64. And I can always appreciate it when a company, they just have this branded look and they stick with it. And Nintendo's branded look, I think, is very, it's very appealing. And as far as the sign-up process and everything goes, like, that was, I mean, crazy easy. At no point did I feel lost. Like, it, yeah, you know, you just start up the app for the first time. It asks you to create an account, and you know, it just guides you through everything. And before you know it, you've caught your first Pokemon. I just said that.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, they had a couple things that were kind of neat with it. One is that when you launch the app, you have to log in with your Google account or create a Pokemon. I think it's Pokemon.com account. I didn't do that. I just used my Google account. And then they basically immediately put a Pokemon near you. And I think it's something that's not part of any of their GPS, any of their the massive part of the game. It's something local to your device where they basically put a Pokemon close to you that you can then catch, and they show you how to do it. And then once you've done that, then they say, hey, come up with a username. I mean, so they kind of get you to engage in the game a little bit before they even ask you to... I think even customize your character, but at least the username, your actual username, comes after your first Pokemon catch, which I thought was kind of a neat idea. That I've run into that, something that's driven me absolutely bonkers with some of the video tutorials that I've been going through on Photoshop. I found a really neat video tutorial set. As far as, it's got a ton of content, it was relatively inexpensive. I own it outright on Udemy. And I think it's going to be a good video tutorial to go through. But the guy spends like chapter after chapter after chapter on settings and document properties and all these things where you're not creating art. You're not using the app the way it needs to be used or is supposed to be used. And I get that these are all important things, but this is something that happens a lot with these sorts of... games, even sometimes games that typically are not as successful, is they don't get you they don't get to engage and buy into the actual process before they start throwing some of the grinding out resources or things like that that a lot of games have. So I thought that was really smart of them to throw that at you really quickly, get you to, you know, hey, wow, I got some. Oh, there's something that's already in my Pokedex right out of the gate, you know.
Throw that at you. Is that a Pokemon?
No, you throw Pokeballs at Pokemons. Actually, there's another term for it. I don't have that term even right. It's a Pokeball thing. Somebody correct me. It's a Poke.
I'm looking at the live feedback. Rhymes. Do we have any?
Pokaboo? Peekaboo. Yeah. Yeah. Pikachu? That guy rhymes with Peekaboo? You don't know how to say Peekaboo.
So yeah, overall, and I think it would be hard to argue that the Pokemon Go app presents a poor user experience when it's just been as wildly successful as it has been for Nintendo. I mean, they've made, I heard it somewhere, I can't verify this or anything, but I heard somebody say that they were making like $1 million a day on this app, which, I mean, you know, that's not bad.
Yeah, you know, if, I mean, for a well-established app, like for the company that we work for, that's not that big of a deal.
Gonna have to cut that. So why don't we get into this? I have a list here of a few apps that work in terms of gamifying. And the idea here, the reason we're talking about this, is that these apps are designed in such a way as to, I guess you could say, manipulate people into doing certain things. And technically, I think you could say that all design technically manipulates people. It's communicating a message. And often the user is left to decide what they're going to do with that information. But even if you're designing a sign for a garage sale, right, you're trying to design that in a way that's going to encourage people to come out to the garage sale. And you are, in some sense, you're not using underhanded tactics or whatever, but you're trying to make the garage sale seem appealing so that people will come to it. So all design influences people or manipulates people. Maybe influences is a better word. But some of these are specifically designed to do just that. Like that is their feature. The feature of the app is we're going to influence you to do these things. So Joe, do you have, I have a list here, but did you have any that were not on that list of, just apps that are designed to encourage good / positive / non-lazy or any kind of behavior?
Yeah. There's two more that I would mention that aren't on your list,
which I will read in a second.
Yeah. So to not steal any of your thunder, the ones that I would suggest are, Runtastic and Strava. Runtastic is basically it's an exercise app. It's initially focused on running, but I use it to track bicycle riding. The thing that I like about it, encouraging good behaviors, is it will actually send you notifications and say, hey, you know, you haven't been on your bike in a few days. Maybe you should go out for a ride, or hey, this would be a great day to start an activity. You know, what do you want to do? And then built into that, it has, it does have some of the things like some of the story-based running soundtracks. So it can say, well, I want to do a half hour run, but it's actually going to have a story-based soundtrack track included in that, which is, David has something related to that there, but they have in-app purchases where you can say, well, I want to buy this one, and it's going to be, getting out of where an avalanche is happening or something, and it kind of guides you on your run as you are doing your running. You say, okay, now you got to run really fast. Now you can slow down. This kind of helps you do kind of interval training or sprint type training. And then Strava, which is another bicycle. This one's very much just focused on bicycling, and I haven't used that one as much. Yeah, and there I am not facing my microphone. See, yeah, this is why
you look there at the waveforms, Joe. And if they're getting really small, like look, you can see my waveforms and they're almost as big as some of your waveforms.
Yeah.
That's bad. That makes me go crazy later today.
Go crazy. Gotcha.
Make these a little bigger too.
Okay. So
Strava.
Yeah. Strava. The thing with Strava, what they do in their particular, their kind of gamification or encouragement that they do there is they actually let you take certain sections of your ride and compare those sections with other riders out there, how quickly another rider did it. You can be what they call king of the hill, where you're the fastest person through that particular section of the ride. And they don't do it, they call them segments, and they don't do really long segments. They do kind of these shorter sections. So part of it will be uphill, part of it will be on the flat, part of it will be downhill, part of it will be a straighter part of the road or a twisty part of the road, and things like that, where it kind of encourages like different riders are going to be able to be the number one in that area. But if you're not a rider that's going to be keeping up with the very number one of, you know, the very fastest people, they're like I'm, you know, I do bike commuting, but I don't, I'm certainly not going to be one of the fastest people on pretty much any segment. But what I can do is compete with myself. I can actually go through and see how quickly I did it last time.
Are you even that good? Can you compete with yourself?
Oh yeah, I can take myself down easy, because usually I'm pretty lazy. And so if I'm just slightly less lazy, then I can really take it up a notch.
I think that makes sense.
I agree with that. So anyway, those are the two apps that I was thinking of, in addition to some crossover between the apps, because you had some stuff in the list there that I would also have brought up.
Yeah, related to the first app you mentioned, where you're gamifying exercise, Sarah has used an app called Zombie Run. That I might be getting the name wrong. It'll be correct in the show notes. But this app basically guides you through a zombie story, and you are trying to survive, and there's zombies chasing you. And it's very similar, where, okay, you have to run really fast right now because there are zombies. Sprint, sprint, sprint. Zombies run. Sarah is watching the podcast. It's called Zombies Run. Zombies, comma, run, exclamation Ooh. Point. So, yeah, and it'll tell you should run, you know, there's zombies chasing you, and then it'll tell you, okay, you know, you've lost them, now you can walk or run slower or whatever.
Yeah, kind of recover and then do another, yeah.
Yeah, so there's that one. There's also just the idea of Apple Watch activity circles, which are pretty interesting. The idea of them is, so the Apple Watch actually measures your heart rate all the time, not Joe's Pebble. Joe's Pebble does not measure your heart rate all the time.
Don't do any of that.
It can also measure how many steps you've taken, and I think that's the only, in terms of measuring your activity, elevation, so it can tell when you've gone up a flight of steps or whatever. Mm-hmm. And based on all of that information, it fills out an activity circle.
Well, sitting and standing, too.
Oh, sitting and standing, too.
Sitting and standing is one of the circles.
Although I think that it doesn't necessarily know that you're actually standing, it just knows that your heart rate is elevated. So yeah, I've seen Tom at work all the time. He'll look at his watch and go, oh, time to stand up. And he'll just stand up and either stand at his desk or walk around a little bit. That's the idea, though, is the activity circles measure how much activity you're getting based on all of those factors. And I've seen a lot of people who are, affected by whether or not they're filling out those circles. And I guess as you fill them out, it gets harder to fill them out to a point. Like it doesn't, you know, you don't get to the point where you're like spending all day exercising. But it will help get you in shape by starting at a point that's reasonable for you, and then slowly making things harder and getting you to walk and maybe eventually run and all of that.
Yeah. And with the Apple Watch version 3, something that they've added with that is kind of social aspects to that.
The watchOS 3, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. So they're adding social aspects where you can actually kind of join a group, and everyone can compare their activity circles in that group and kind of try to keep up with one another or push one another to be a little more active.
And I think that's a really important aspect of gamifying these things, because as you get good at these things, eventually it starts to become not as big a thrill to fill out the circle, at least I imagine. And at some point you're wanting to show that off to somebody. And that's the interesting thing. I think the social aspects and all of that, they play off of, or they can play off of, our pride, which, I mean, may or may not be a good thing. We'll probably discuss that a little bit later. But yeah, so you've got the Apple Watch circles, or activity circles. Another app that's really popular, I've seen a lot of people use it, is the Carrot app. They have a bunch of apps now, but I think the initial one was a to-do list app. And Carrot is this robotic overlord that is always trying to get you to do things. So it's a to-do list app. You put things on the list, and Carrot will be angry if you don't do X number of things a day. And as you as you do more things, Carrot becomes happy, and now you have a happy robotic overlord. And the more things you do, you get to unlock certain things and features. And if you do a lot of things, that means you can do fewer things the next day. And it's very much gamification of your to-do list. I tried it for a little bit, and I don't really like angry robots, so I ended up removing it.
Who doesn't like angry robots? This guy.
But it's very, very clever. Like, there's a lot of fun copy. It's a well-designed app. If you're looking for something to make to-do lists fun, you know what? Let's make to-do lists great again.
Yeah.
If you're looking for something like that, I definitely recommend trying it. I don't know if it costs money, but even if it's like a dollar or two, it's worth it for the experience. It's fun. Another thing I have in here is called iAchievement. iAchievement is just, it gamifies generically. Like, it's a set of tools to help you gamify your whole life. I have not tried that app. There are a few like it. iAchievement got good reviews. I think it was from Lifehacker, which is why I mention it. But yeah, that's another one. And then a lot of Bible reading apps will, maybe they're not explicitly gamifying Bible reading, but they enable it. They enable you to socially share, you know, post to Facebook when you've completed your reading plan or even when you've completed your daily reading. I don't know why you would post every day when you've completed your daily reading. I wouldn't want to be that guy.
Yeah, it's one of the things that's a little bit of a slippery slope with these sorts of apps and these sorts of ideas, in that, for instance, I've been partway through a ride. Like, I've headed into the office. I'm halfway, three quarters of the way there, and realize I didn't turn on Runtastic. And then I'm frustrated. Like,
well, this run was useless.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. It didn't count. This ride didn't count because I didn't track it with this software. And it's like, well, no, that's stupid. I mean, it's just, I'm doing the ride. I'm doing the real thing in real life. The game aspect of it shouldn't trump whether or not the real thing is happening, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that gets at your motivations. Now, I think so when we talk about like getting in shape, I think there is there's a point to where you tell yourself, well, I know I want to get in shape. I know that is a good goal. And so I am going to leverage the fact that I like getting these small little rewards of having filled the circle or getting to share something on Facebook. Like, I'm going to leverage that, and I'm going to use that as a means to motivate myself to do this thing that I know is a good goal. So maybe you're using something that's inherently maybe morally neutral in order to foster or to help move you toward a good goal.
Mm-hmm.
But what quickly can happen, like you were saying, is we lose track of the ultimate goal, and we focus only on the small goal.
Right. Yeah, because it's easy for us to have like that Pavlovian response kind of be become the driving thing. And without that, then, you know, it's kind of like people have less motivation to do things apart from that. Or, you know, well, my phone's dead, so I guess I can't go for a bike ride because I'm not going to be able to track it, you know. Or, I mean, that's kind of a silly example. I don't know how often something like that happens, but I've certainly seen that in myself, not to a great degree. There's also been, I know there were examples. Actually, Strava had to change the way that they were doing their kind of their king of the hill thing, where you were the king of a particular segment on a ride, because some people were riding dangerously fast on some downhill sections, downhill pavement sections, and there was actually a bicycle wreck where a bicyclist died, and they think it's because he was trying to get the fastest time down this section and ended up going exceptionally fast around corners that he just shouldn't have been going that fast down, but he wanted to get the top time. Became obsessed over it. And it's one of those things where it's difficult to actually blame the app developer
or the designer
or the designer or anything like that for that, you know, for people abusing something that they put in place. But you can also see where you need to have a little bit of you need to have a little bit of social responsibility. I mean, I've also seen articles where people are talking about, you know, someone walking off a cliff because they were doing Pokemon Go, looking at their phone instead of actually, you know, paying attention to the surroundings around them.
Yeah. And so it seems like it can get to the point where again, all you care about is the goal that you set to get to your ultimate goal of losing weight or staying in shape or whatever that is. And so I think that's kind of an important point because, you know, if you're designing an app, that's something to keep in mind is there a way that you can be reminding your users of what it is, you know, why it is they're using their app, using your app? You know, is there a way for you to not just give them progress on, hey, you've almost completed your circle, but also indicate specifically how many calories it is that you've managed to burn or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, it's something that pulls... There is a design aspect there. There's a design challenge for those of us that are out there doing design work to remember to kind of pull people back into the real world in that process. And I think that's important.
Yeah. And we got a question here on the live chat. Would it be improper to gamify Bible reading? That's a question we definitely want to deal with. And it's actually in our notes to deal with it. So we're going to get there. I think one thing we need to do that's going to be helpful too is distinguish between apps that passively encourage good behavior or positive behavior or healthy behavior, things that are generally considered to be a positive impact on yourself or society. I think apps that do that as the goal of the app and apps that do that as a side effect. And when we talk about something like Pokemon Go, I don't think Nintendo set out to create an app that helps people walk around outside.
No, I think they did. I really do.
You do?
Yeah. I think they couldn't have not thought of that.
Well, what I mean is they set out to make money and they set out to, like, I'm not saying that it wasn't a sub goal, but I don't think the board meeting started with the CEO or whatever saying, let's make an app that helps people get outside. And then somebody said, well, what if we bring Pokemon into it? Like, I think it was differently thought through than that.
I think it's cute that you think that that there was a board meeting with a CEO where they first decided to make this app.
Yes.
So David was invited to this board meeting at Nintendo. Go on. How did it go?
And but that's the thing, right? Is like Nintendo is not marketing this, even if it is their goal, even if their main goal is we want to help people exercise. That's not how they're marketing it, right? They are marketing it as a game. Like the game is fun. You get to collect Pokemon. Like these are the features. Nobody at Nintendo is saying, download this app and you'll get more exercise and it'll help you get in shape.
Well, they should be, and I think they all are. And I think you're totally wrong. I mean, since we're both speculating and neither of us have any idea if this is true.
Well, no, I mean, I know how they're advertising it.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Okay. But to distinguish that, like Pokemon is much more about the, you know, catching Pokemon and all of that than it is about exercising in terms of how it's framed.
Yeah.
Distinguishing that from something like the Run Zombies or Zombie Run
or
Zombies.
Runtastic or Strava, things like that. They're like explicitly their main purpose is, hey, let's get out there and get riding and track it. And you can see how many miles you've done in a year. And it's an exercise program.
And I would say that if the goal of the Pokemon Go game was to get people running or walking around outside and all of that, I think that they kind of failed. Because like you described, when you went to Riverfront Park, it wasn't a lot of people walking around. And when we went out, I think Molly said, well, if you were expecting to do a lot of walking, like you should have just like gone for a walk because you're going to be stopping a lot. You're going to be trying to catch the Pokemon. You're going to be stopping at the whatever the things are where you collect Pokeballs. And that honestly was what it was. If I just had set out to go for a walk, I would have been paying more attention to my surroundings. Ian pointed out that there were a lot of people like looking out over the bridge, and Riverfront Park in Spokane is a beautiful place.
Yes, stunning.
But people
stunning.
Were not looking at Riverfront Park.
Well, actually, one of our coworkers, a guy named Harold, came with us as well, and he didn't do Pokemon at all. He was just walking with us and kind of seeing the phenomenon and whatnot.
And he wanted me to emphasize, he did not do Pokemon at all.
Definitely did not.
No Pokemon.
Right. And he, at one point he said, don't you guys, I just wanted to just have to mention you guys, there's a river here, and we're walking over this bridge that has just a beautiful river going through underneath it. And I said, yeah, I see it. It's right here. It's this blue patch in the middle of my screen underneath the brown patch, which is where I can walk. It's like, ugh. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. So I like, and one thing they did succeed in doing, I think, is a lot of people have met new friends as a result of this.
Yeah.
Through various functions in the game, you end up talking to people and making new friends. So I don't want to say that it's a total loss, but yeah, it's definitely not as successful at getting you out walking, enjoying nature as an app that was specifically designed to do that could have been.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I did definitely see people, you kind of have to move around and go to different spots to, there's a thing where you get eggs and you have to incubate those eggs, and you actually have to cover, I think, 5 kilometers to incubate an egg. So that's not insignificant walking. That's 5 kilometers with the app on and running on your phone. Not like in, you know, with the screen dimmed or anything like that. Which I don't know if that's possible as much as it sucks the battery life. You can probably make about 2 kilometers and then your battery's done. So there are things like that where you actually do have to move around and get around. But I was surprised at how many people we saw down in the park that were kind of, you know, sitting in an area,
literally just sitting, yeah,
sitting there waiting for Pokemon to come. They had, you know, people can put out these things like lures or something, which draw, you know, the virtual creatures to a particular space. And so people were hanging out there for the creatures to show up, as opposed to walking around, finding them and doing some of the other things in the game.
Yeah. So I consider that, like, the difference there, I think, is important, because as designers, I think something that we can be thinking about is, okay, I know that the purpose of my app or the thing that I'm creating is to do X, but are there side benefits that I can bring to the user? So that somebody who is playing Pokemon, like, they might not get the same exercise experience that they would out of an app dedicated to that. But at the same time, they are getting some positive value out of it, which I don't think can be said for, it definitely can't be said for all games. I don't think it can be said for most games.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, one of the things that the Nintendo Wii was highlighted is that it's an active gaming system. You stand up, you move your body around and whatnot. But I mean, most of the games, you didn't have to be very active at all to play them. And you certainly weren't getting out of the house and getting fresh air and things like that. So there's some neat things about this, this sort of augmented reality sort of game that that brings to the table. Actually, some of the, I think one of the things that's really interesting about it to me is this is a little bit of a taste of what something like an Oculus Rift that's for mobile devices could really do, where you could actually have an overlay over your world so you can see through and actually see the world around you, but you'd also have an active overlay all the time. Like, you know, in this particular instance, you're seeing essentially a Google Maps layout of streets without any
street names and stuff, or?
Well, no, I mean, yeah, there's no street names, but I'm thinking about the topography. No topography. Right. It's just flat.
Flat.
But it's got the streets layout there. And then you actually use your camera and see the virtual creatures when you see one nearby and tap on it. That's when it actually pulls that part of the UI up. Whereas in something, if you did something more Oculus Rift or the Google Cardboard, where you actually have your phone up in front of you, they could do something like that where they put your phone in front of you, split the screen so you're looking through stereo screen, and then they're using the camera in the back to actually look through and see the world in front of you. But the potential legal ramifications of something like that are crazy. I mean, just absolutely crazy. So...
Yeah, so I think, but that is a consideration, because you think of a game like, well, let's just go to like polar opposites here, right? You think of a game like Grand Theft Auto, and you think of a game like Pokemon Go. And when you think of a game like Grand Theft Auto, that is, I'm not one of those crazy people who says violent video games make people like cause people to become violent or anything.
Yeah, but there are some negative aspects to Grand Theft Auto.
There definitely are. And like, that's the point, right? Like, what, one of the things that it does do is give you a lower view of human life. Like it grates at that. I'm not saying that tomorrow you're going to become a serial killer. I'm not saying you're ever going to become a serial killer, but I do wonder what effect that has on you, when you think about so-and-so died and, you know, unless they were about your best friend or whatever. Right.
Right. Yeah. In fact, one thing on that, and I will, I'll find it to put in the links. There was a PSA that someone did about violent video games. And all the PSA was a like a 10-year-old boy describing playing Grand Theft Auto. That's all it was.
Right.
And it was chilling. It was just one of those things you're like, I can't believe those words are coming out of that sweet face, that kid. You know, I mean, I can't believe that he's just talking so callously and nonchalantly. And it, not to say that he is disassociated from reality and thinks that going out and doing that in real life is okay, but the fact that he can even talk about, I mean, like, he could say things that I just couldn't even say without feeling just dirty and unclean and just gross, and he was just kind of nonchalantly like, no big deal, just talking about it. And I think that's kind of, I get what you're saying there, at least.
Yeah, and I also want to be clear, like, as a Calvinist, I think that we sin out of our own hearts. That our sin is a thing that comes from within us, not from without us. But at the same time, the things that we put in our lives, they do have a dramatic effect on how it is that we sin. So anyway, if you compare those two, right, both the goals for both games, presumably, is to entertain people and to make money, right? Both companies want to do those as at least two of their goals. They want to entertain people and make money. But the things that the effects that the game has on its users are pretty dramatically different. And I'm not saying that Pokemon is all positive, and I'm not saying that Grand Theft, well, I might say that Grand Theft Auto is all negative. but that's something that we need to think about. And not just in games, but are there things that I can put in this app that has function X that actually have at least not a negative impact on the users. And another example I have here is slot machines, right? Like, slot machines are really designed to get you addicted to doing a given thing. And we have figured out ways of triggering that kind of addictive behavior in people. You know, is your app going to do that? And if it's going to do that, is it going to do that in a negative way? Or are you going to be encouraging people through some sort of a psychological addictive thing to read scripture? And that kind of brings us around to the idea of gamifying Bible reading, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I would say one last thing, and this is something that is true of almost the top grossing games. All the top grossing games, if you want to look at the games that make the most money in the App Store, all of the top grossing ones, I'd say something. And this is Mac App Store, but it's true in Android as well. Probably at least the top 20 or more are free, at least. And the reason that they're making the most money is because they give you the game, and then they get you into the game, and then they start selling you in-app purchases. They start taking money from you after they've gotten you engaged in the game. And there's actually some really, there's been some research done where they talk about, where it's pretty clear, I'll see if I can find the article. There was a really great, I think it was Game of Sutra was the site, which is a weird name for a site, but it's a gaming site, not a, you know, not other stuff. But it was, they had an article talking about Candy Crush. And if you've been doing Facebook or iOS for any time, you've probably heard of Candy Crush Saga.
No, what's that?
It's a game. Anyway, the game starts out apparently really easily. I've never played it, just on principle. And it's not that it's a wicked game or anything like that. But it starts off easy. It gets you into the game. You play for a while. And then they ramp up the difficulty of the game so much that you have to start doing in-app purchases to continue proceeding with the game. And there's some people, rare people here and there, who can actually make it through that. And they're the ones that will go into the reviews and say, I don't know what everyone's talking about. I completed the game without ever making an in-app purchase. You know what? You're not the normal person.
And some of those are employees.
And some of those people might be employees, because the fact of the matter is there's very strong intentionality of making things tougher so that you have to spend money and give them money to continue playing the game, to get that satisfaction of having completed the game or completed a difficult level or whatever. And the game we started with today, Pokemon Go, is free. And it's making a ton of money, and it's making a ton of money on in-app purchases, just to be clear.
Yeah, that's true. So,
we were going to go on and talk about...
Well, that actually, as you were speaking, I think there's a couple of things that, like, there's so much there. And I mean, we could do a whole episode on game design.
Yeah. And in-app purchases, by the way, are not inherently bad. We don't disavow in-app purchases.
I was just going to say that in-app purchases are inherently... No, just kidding.
I mean, a big part of that is what kind of supports the company that we work for. There's a difference in manipulating people for that and offering them true value with that. They're actually getting something more that's a persisting value.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is what's really interesting to me is like everything, you know, when you're making a game, everything you know about user interface and user experience, you have to flip it on its head, because when you're making an app, you want to make it as easy for the user to do the thing, to do X, as possible. When you're making a game, yeah, your goal is actually to make that difficult, because if it's not difficult, the game's not challenging, which means it's not fun.
Right.
But then at the same time, you have to find a way to make money. And I mean, this idea of like in-app purchases, this is nothing new in terms of how you charge money to make the game. Arcades have been doing this for you know, at least a few decades now, and the idea of, oh, you've died, now you have to put in a coin to play again or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's definitely a thing, and that actually had the same kinds of consequences, where you've got kids, you know, stealing quarters from their parents, going to the arcade or whatever.
Or I personally would get a $5 allowance and be down visiting my mom at law school. And we would go to the arcade. My brother and I would have $5 each, 25-cent games, right? And we would burn through those in about 2 hours.
Yeah.
Except my brother was really good. He could make his last longer because he was better at the games than me, but still. Yeah. It's the very same principle.
Well, and at the same time, you go, okay, well, that's $5, right? Like let's say that's $5 a week or whatever, and you're really getting enjoyment out of that, or $5 a month or whatever it is. Like, you're getting enjoyment out of it. There's not necessarily something inherently wrong with that. One of the big problems... that you were mentioning is not only can you spend like a dollar here, a dollar there on these games, but some of them will say, oh, you can just pay $500 and never have to worry about running out of tokens or whatever it is. And people do that. People will pay $500. And I just don't think that anybody is in a financial place where that is a reasonable thing to do. And if you know that that's not a reasonable thing to do, you should not be putting that in your app. You should not make it so that there is an option to do something that, while it's going to benefit your company a lot, it's going to be detrimental to the user's budget.
Yeah, and in fact, I ran into this with I was looking for children games that are specifically oriented towards little children, because some of my kids were looking for, you know, just something that was morally not a bad thing and just kind of a fun, silly game for little kids to play,
like Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, like Grand Theft Auto. So I found this penguin game. And it seemed like, oh, this is kind of a fun little game. And I went in and looked at it and actually ended up getting it for my kids. And this is where I learned the lesson that I read the reviews, because I got the game for my kids. And then we started playing with it, and I'm kind of supervising, want to make sure that I can see how the game works and see how they interact with it and things like that. And very quickly, it pushed my kids to make a $19.95 in-app purchase for a game that I'd paid a dollar for. I'm like, okay, I already gave you money, and now you're trying to get $20 out of a kid. It's definitely a kid game.
Right.
Dad is not going to be hanging out here playing this game. But they're trying to get money out of the kid. And the funny thing about it is, this particular game handled it so awkwardly that my kids were not yet engaged in the game. They didn't care about the game enough to not be really annoyed by the purchase. Whereas, you know, if they'd really gotten into it and were, you know, deeper into, you know, emotionally and mentally invested in this game, then that purchase would have been somewhere they've been really pushing me to get it. Instead, they just brought it to me like, this is stupid. And they were really frustrated by the thing instead. And I'm like, that's poor design, guys. So I sent them some feedback on how they could get $20 out of my kids next time. No, I didn't. I uninstalled it. Actually, I left a terrible review and then I uninstalled it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, it's interesting because whenever you make anything, there's always the chance that somebody's going to use it in an irresponsible or sinful way, right? Like you can't, like there are people who use Photoshop for things that are evil. And there are people who waste their entire life doing very pointless things on Photoshop, right? They spend the money on Photoshop, they buy every new release, and all they use it for is to make forum signatures. And like they never make any money on it, and they're spending thousands of dollars. And you look at, you know, can you hold Adobe accountable for that person, or for the fact that Photoshop is used, you know, to market things in a sexual way or whatever? Like, I don't think you can blame Photoshop for those things. But then you turn around and you say you knew what you were doing, like with the game that you're talking about, mm-hmm, or you knew that this was an outcome. It's one thing if it's an accident, and Scripture has a principle for this, right? Like if you're swinging an axe and the axe head flies off and it kills somebody, you can't be held accountable for that. There's no punishment. Like that's not your fault. But at the same time, if you have an ox and that ox is known for goring people, and the ox gores somebody, and you should have put it down and you didn't, well, now you are culpable. Now you are accountable for that person's life. I don't know that you get the murder charge. I don't recall off the top of my head. But Scripture does have this idea of you were doing a thing, the thing caused harm to somebody else, and you had no control over it, versus no, you really should have seen this coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think, any of those type of things where they prey upon kids, that's one of the things that's most frustrating for me, because I, you know, my kids do some casual gaming with iOS devices and with Kindles and whatnot. And when they specifically prey on kids, it drives me up the wall. So, I look for apps that don't have in-app purchasing at all for them. And then if they do have in-app purchasing, you know, we've talked enough about it that they're familiar with the fact that they're just not allowed to do that. And none of them have the passwords to do any of that anyways. I make sure that they're locked out from being able to do that. But then they'll come to me and they'll be like sad and frustrated, you know, because this game, there was a Bugs Bunny game, it's basically just a straight ripoff of Temple Run. In fact, I don't think it's a ripoff. I think it was actually done by the same studio that did Temple Run. They just changed the images and whatnot to reflect, you know, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and all those guys. But the thing that drives me nuts with that particular game is it allows you to run a certain amount of time and then it wants you to spend money to keep running. I'm like, are you kidding? So the original Temple Run game has in-app purchases too, but it doesn't do it that way. It actually lets you keep playing the game. It just, you know, if you want to save your spot and continue forward and stuff, instead of starting from the beginning, it does different things. Anyway, that one you can keep playing, and yet the people who paid that same studio to switch their game to this other style also very intentionally changed it so that kids are going to be pushing their parents for in-app purchases to get the to get that extra play time, the extra functionality with the time. And I think that that's, I just think that that's, there's some, there, that's a very dangerous place to be morally.
Yeah. Yeah. And so now you've got, we've kind of got this distinction between, and I'm glad that we had this lead up to talking about the Bible apps and everything, because we've got a distinction between doing something on purpose and that causes or encourages sinful or irresponsible behavior. And then we've got this idea of, well, people are going to do what they're going to do. And not you can't think of everything, right? When it comes to, my dad on the live comments here mentioned games playing on sinful tendencies like intellectual pride to get you to come play the game and see their ads. That's an interesting one too. Because it's a question of, I don't know, like it seems like the pride is something that's in your heart, and when they prey on that, they are they're bringing that out of you, but they're not necessarily doing something to, well, I don't know, like once you post and look, I got this score on this quiz, that's not necessarily an act of humility. What do you think about that, Joe?
There was a fantastic post He specifically, I know you edited that out in your comment, but it's a Facebook quizzes he was mentioning, which I...
Oh, yeah. I didn't edit it out. It just... Yeah.
Anyway, they the Facebook quizzes, there's two big problems with them. One is a lot of them are just basically random. It doesn't really care what your answers are. It's just going to give you just one of 25 different responses.
The point is that you see the ads.
Well, the point is that you see the ads, and the point is that you actually give them permission to certain aspects of your Facebook profile, which is the more dangerous part. You're actually giving them information about you. But there was, I saw a great post. Ringo Starr is on Facebook. He's you know, Ringo Starr, the Beatle. He's still around and he's on Facebook. And he took one of those quizzes and it said, it was, which Beatle are you? And he got John Lennon. He's like, what the heck? I loved it. He took a screenshot of it and posted it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I question just about everything about those Facebook quizzes, and I would be willing to believe that the creators of them have done just about any evil thing you want to tell me they've done.
Yeah, I avoid them like the plague.
And Joe's never got the plague, so he's pretty good at that.
Pretty good at not getting the Black Plague or taking Facebook quizzes. Now, probably somebody's going to come in my feed. I'll be like, oh, that's so funny. I'll do it.
Yeah, and then the next day.
Yeah, and then you guys are going to...
It's the end of Joe's lungs.
Good. Wow. That escalated quickly.
Is that not what we were talking about? I thought. Anyway. So we don't have much time left. Let's talk about the Bible, Joe. Let's talk about Bible reading. I think being a Presbyterian gives me a pretty clear cut answer to this on a lot of fronts, not necessarily all fronts, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts too.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
That's why you're here. Joe, what are your thoughts?
I get to be here one more week. Yay. Let's see. So I think, I think that gamification of things like Bible reading or getting through reading plans is, I don't think it's inherently evil. I think that there are ways where you can, there's a fine line between encouraging people to do good behavior and manipulating people to do, even good behavior. And I think I personally would say that if you're trying to get someone to spend time in scripture, spend time reading their Bible, getting that into them, I think that is, I'd give some latitude in that. What I would say is dangerous is if you basically say, well, you know, we'll sell you this reading plan and then, you know, it's an in-app purchase.
If you
to
miss
keep
it,
access
pay
it's
99
to it.
Cents.
Yeah, or something like that. There's some of those things where I actually have seen that where they have a, it is kind of like that, the app you were mentioning, iAchievement, where they actually, you can actually set, I'm kind of speaking out of turn because I don't recall the specifics, but I remember a specific ...
That's an ellipsis.
Yeah. Where you could basically link your checking account to this service and say, if I don't do this, you can give money to this charity. So you're giving it to a good thing. You're not giving it to that service. But they basically set up a way to, you know, you've got the carrot and you've got the stick. So they gave you a way to give yourself a stick. Like, well,
but at the end of the year, you can be like, look, I donated $500 to this charity.
Exactly. I'm so generous.
Either way, you're a good person.
Terrible at eating sugar or whatever it is. Okay, you get a funny look on your face when you're reading the Facebook comments.
Facebook is gamifying live video. It just gave us some sort of an award for conversation starter. 10 comments so far. Like, I guess live feedback from Facebook here. They're gamifying things.
They're gamifying our talk about gamification. We should be getting some awards for having a... You know, for having done this many live videos.
Well, unfortunately, if we don't get 10 more comments, we're going to have to pay 99 cents. It's an in-app... No.
So, anyways, I would say that I think it's good to encourage people to let people... we've even talked about having allowing people to set notifications for reading plans. Like, okay, you start a reading plan. You can actually set, we don't have this in place yet, but it's a thing that we've discussed, is that you could set up a notification to remind yourself to start a reading plan, or to remind yourself, hey, at 7 a.m. tomorrow, I want my phone to ding and say, hey, open up your Olive Tree app and do your reading plan. You know, so I think there's some merit in those things because we need those reminders. But I think there's a point where you can get manipulative in it. And I think that's where things become dangerous, and where that threshold is and where you're pushing beyond, what's appropriate is, I think I can, yeah, it's more of a gut thing. I think I would know if it was, but, that's also one of those things where you can say, well, sure, I would know that other people are wicked and would do it wrong. I wouldn't do it wrong because I'm so not wicked.
Well, you are not wicked. It's, I mean, you don't play Grand Theft Auto.
That's true. So I'm basically a good person.
Yeah.
Theology 101. No.
Yeah.
Point 101. What are your thoughts, David?
Yeah. So, and I haven't thought a whole lot about this. I've thought some about it, and it seems fairly clear cut, but I'm willing to accept that there are probably edge cases to what I'm about to say that I haven't thought about. But I would say, well, first of all, let me draw the distinction between doing something like having a reading plan and checking off passages that you have read so that you know that you've read them, right? So that you don't end up reading Genesis 13 a second time or whatever, right? I would draw a distinction between that and having some kind of a circle plan where you get, you know, you circle plan. That's going to be the title. It's just like words coming out my mouth. No, it's having some sort of an achievement awards, like Facebook just gave us an achievement for having 10 comments so far, or you get the Torah scholar because you've read the first 5 books of the Bible 5 times or whatever. Like, there's a big difference between, for your own purposes, I want to just make sure that I don't reread the same passage I'm trying to go through and read the Bible in a year or whatever. I think there is a big difference there between preying on your desire for rewards and or your pride or whatever, between that and just making sure that you've read through the whole Bible and keeping track of that. So with that distinction drawn, I think that anything that lies on the gamification side of that is inherently sinful.
Wow.
And the reason that I would say that is specifically because I'm a Presbyterian and I hold to something called the regulative principle of worship. And I take these acts of reading scripture, praying. I mean, we haven't talked about gamifying praying, right? Like, you have your prayer list. Like, here's an app idea for you. Please don't make this. You have your prayer list, and as you go through it, you check the things off, and like, you get to share to Facebook and be like, look, I prayed for 10 people or 10 nations or whatever today. I don't know. Like, that, it starts to sound weird. The closer you get to it being actual, like, what everybody recognizes as communion with God or actual worship. Right. So I take reading scripture, and I take prayer. I take these things as acts of worship, and because of the regulative principle of worship, I don't think that it's okay to add something to them. So let me just explain what the regulative principle of worship is. And Joe and I are probably going to have an episode where we discuss this and how it relates to design within the church and within Christianity. But the regulative principle of worship says that in acts of worship, in private worship, in family worship, and in corporate worship, we're supposed to do the things that God has commanded, and we're not supposed to do anything else. Now, some people will say that all of life is worship. That's a fairly relatively new thought or a new concept. Traditionally, the church has always understood worship to be things like praying, singing psalms, reading scripture, hearing the word preached. And I mean, things that you probably think of when you think of worship, right? Not so much using Photoshop to design something. Like, we would say that's an act that's supposed to be glorifying to God, but not necessarily worship. So anyway, when we talk about specific acts of worship, I would be opposed to anything that tries to add something to that. And I think that man is very, very prone to try to come up with clever ways to improve the acts of worship that God has given us, whether that be through adding smoke and lights and lasers at a worship concert, and I mean it is essentially a concert, right? Whether that be through that, or whether that is through gamifying prayer, gamifying Bible reading. So I would be generally opposed to just about any form of that. And again, drawing that distinction, I think having a reading plan and checking off days, or using an app, or even having an app remind you, hey, you make sure you read the Bible today or whatever. I consider those things to be reasonable, because they're not really a part of the worship process or anything like that. They're just helping you make sure that you've actually done the thing that you said you would do.
Okay. I think that's an interesting perspective. I would say that comes down a little differently than where I would land on that. But
Joe, are we going to have our first argument? No, we don't have time to argue.
Then this wouldn't be our first.
I mean, on the podcast. I think the first real argument we had was with Les in the last episode.
Yeah, he dropped the hammer on you.
He did. I was crushed.
And the funny thing is he's Presbyterian, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know how he can be Presbyterian and be wrong about anything.
I've been wondering the same thing for a while. Oh, I mean, not about Les.
Oh. We have a comment on Facebook here that says certain children's programs with uniforms and trophies for memorizing scripture.
Yeah.
Memorizing scripture is different from reading scripture, for one thing. I don't know that that's something I'd have to think about. I might lump that in.
Yeah, Desiring God put out an app called Fighterverse, which is a scripture memorization app, which I actually really like. I haven't used it in a while, but I was using it pretty regularly for a while, and I'd like to get back into using it. I think it's a neat idea of basically putting a whole verse up there on the, you know, here's this passage that I want to memorize, and then it takes and removes certain numbers of the words, certain percent of the words, so that you can go through it. You've got some cues in place to remind you as you're trying to memorize it, but it removes more and more and more until there's nothing there, and you have to recite the whole thing with no cues at all.
Is it gamified? Does it try to, does it give you rewards and things?
Yeah, I don't recall for sure if there's achievements in there or not.
Because this is the thing that bugs me. Like, even if we throw out the regulative principle and we're normative principle, or we take John Frame's take on it, even if we do that, worship is something that we do for God's sake. Worship is something that we do because, you know, out of love for God. Reading the Bible is not just good for us. It is something that we do because we recognize that the Bible is worthy to be read. And I think that when you gamify that, when you make it about getting the accolade, getting the reward, getting the achievement, or about sharing it with your friends and feeling good about yourself, when we do that, we do sweep out from underneath you one of the actual purposes of that act of worship. Now, you could argue that there are ways of doing gamification that don't do that. And we would have to talk in detail about like each specific instance. But yeah, I don't know, that makes me really nervous. And that's my thought on Awana too, is it's like kids should be reading scripture and memorizing scripture. We should be encouraging them to do that out of love for God, out of love for his word, and not out of love for getting candy at the end of the night.
Yeah. I think, your advice on parenting is always helpful to me. Thank you.
Well, they don't just do this with kids. Like, these are things they do with adults too.
No, I know.
Not at Awana, but.
Wait a minute. I get candy though every time I bring my Bible to church.
What is church do you go to?
Problem?
Don't say it out loud.
Yeah. Oh.
All right. Man, there's a lot more to talk about on this subject. I have on here.
Yeah, I think there's room for another discussion. Maybe.
Yeah, I wasn't going to try to discuss it today.
Yeah. So stop talking. No, I'm kidding.
I'm just going to cut the episode at stop talking.
Yeah, exactly. Stop talking. because David had some other points here to bring up, and I think they're good ones. So it's something we'll address in the future, but go for it.
Yeah, no, I just have on here churches using Pokemon to get people in the door, manipulating people. Oh, manipulating people. That's what we just talked about. Manipulating people to accept Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, could you write a game that the goal is to get the person to pray the sinner's prayer? And the difference between manipulation and good design, or manipulation and influencing people, or whatever, where you draw that line. But those are interesting topics for another day.
Yeah, I had one of my kids lead another one of my kids in the sinner's prayer the other day. And I was like, huh, that's really cool. I'm really, really good at it because I've said it so many times.
All right, well, we'll just end on that note.
So, well, did you have any recommendations?
Oh, yeah, recommendations. Did you, Joe?
Yeah, I did.
You should go first.
Okay. My recommendation was prompted by Prime Day, which happened this week, where Amazon has one special day of, basically it's kind of a Christmas in July sort of a thing where they have one day where they have a lot of extra, like Black Friday type deals going on. And I fell for it and bought a Kindle Fire tablet. This is my second one of these. They had these for $33. And for $33, that's an amazing little Android tablet. It's a really solid tablet. Probably performance-wise, it's very close to, I'd say it's very close to a Nexus 7 2013 model. Not quite as crisp of a screen, but it also has a SD card slot in it and quad core processor, things like that. And they had them for $33. I've actually considered repeatedly buying them for, I did buy one for $40, and I would consider buying them where you get six for the price of five, where you get them for, I think, $43 each. I think it's a really great deal on a very durable little tablet. Don't know. Well, let's just say it's important to have a durable tablet if you're having a tablet at my house. Anyway, so that was my recommendation. I think they're definitely a lowest, as far as specs and whatnot, they're kind of a low to middle end device compared to the latest generation. But the, Android tablets seem to have kind of tapered off on the, there's not a whole lot of really powerful, fast tablets out there in the Android world. They seem to have kind of slowed down in their development, there. So it's a real good little tablet and works well. It works great with our app, which is what I love it for. I can load our app on there and have, like I said, $33. I got a tablet that'll do that. And this tablet, I have another one. It's hit the floor many times and it's fine.
The floor?
Yeah. Well, the floor is not so great. It's a tough tablet.
And your tablet is orange. Just from a design perspective, it is orange.
It is orange. The other one I have is black.
It's really bright orange, too.
It's quite bright. It's totally rad, like me.
So my recommendation is the... So if you're a photographer, I think a lot of designers are at least casually interested in photography, and it can be an expensive hobby. Or if you're into filmmaking. We mentioned this on the episode with Marcus Pittman, but my recommendation is vintage lenses. And what I mean by vintage lenses are lenses that were made so long ago that only manual focus existed. I think that if you're a designer, you're not a photographer, but you're trying to get interested, you're trying to do photography for certain projects and things, I think that they work really well. You can get them super cheap. I have one of my favorites here is a 50mm f1.4 that I got for right around $100. If you're really patient, you can get it even cheaper. You'll find these on eBay. You'll find them on Goodwill's website. You might find them at local thrift stores. But yeah, you get these. And the glass in them, everything looks different. Like, film has a different look, not just because film pictures were taken on film. That's definitely part of it. But also because the lenses from back then, they focused a lot more on the character of the way, specifically out of focus light, but even light in general, they focus a lot more on the character of the lens than they focused on sharpness. Whereas right now, everything's a race for sharpness, and sharpness has its place, especially if you're taking images for like textures and stuff. But if you're trying to do artistic work, these lenses can be really, really nice. My dad says he was alive when they made manual focuses. does that make him vintage?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
It's interesting because...
Like a fine wine.
What's the antique? Antique is supposed to be over 100 years old unless you're a car. Like cars just get the special exception.
Okay.
Anyway, so you're not antique. I guess you are vintage, Dad. What was I saying?
You were talking about those sweet, sweet old lenses and how...
Yeah, you're not going to get great zooms. You're going to get mostly prime lenses. There are a few nicer zooms. But yeah, you can get a 50, an 80. Like you could have... like. So what I have is a 28, a 50, and a 130, a 90 and a 135, all of which are f2.8 or below. And they're all like, they're sharp lenses. They're nice lenses. Yeah, I really like them. So definitely recommend that. I will post a link. I'll post links in the show notes to the lenses that I personally have, or at least a couple of my favorites.
Yeah. And I actually have a 50 millimeter f1.4 and a 28 millimeter
2.8.
Yeah, 2.8. And the reason David knows that is because I bought them from him a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I use them on my Canon. I love them. They're fun.
And you do need an adapter to use these. And like Nikons aren't very nice to these adapters. Some of them work, some of them don't. But the Sonys and the Canons, they work pretty ubiquitously. So yeah, that's my recommendation. If you guys would like to contact us, you can do that through our Twitter. That's Helvetic Podcast. And if you like the show, we'd like to encourage you. If you use Overcast, you can swipe to the right, and then there's a little star button on this episode. You have to tap it. You have to do this before the episode finishes playing, because it will clear, and then you'll have to re-download it, and we wouldn't want that. So if you pull out your phone right now, unless you're driving or playing Pokemon. If you pull out your phone right now and swipe and hit star, that will help keep us in the, right now we're in like the top three or top five anyway, of the religion and spirituality section on Overcast.
Yeah.
Which you would think gets us more listeners than it does. But, the other way you can help out is, if you go to iTunes and leave us a review. We read all the iTunes reviews out loud. So if you want to be,
did you look at iTunes and see if we have,
I did look at them, okay. This morning.
Fine, people.
So if you want to be, relatively famous among a very small group of people.
Yeah, big fish, small pond.
Big fish, small pond. you can go leave us an iTunes review. Well, thank you. Thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, thank you very much. And we will see you guys again very soon.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't say next week anymore because...
Who knows?
Weekly is rough.
Our schedule, it's craziness.
All right. Joe, I'm going to let you say the final goodbye.
TTFN.
And now for a legal disclaimer.
David and I both work for Olive Tree, a division of HarperCollins Christian Publishers. We produce these podcasts for ourselves, not for our company, and the opinions we express in this podcast are our own opinions and not necessarily those of Olive Tree.